all about the family, isn't it? I watched that clip and I swear I should go looking through my closet to see if we have some red spandex super suits stored away with some black mask, because I swear I've been in that scene before. Of course, you laugh at that, but it's kind of an uneasy laugh because I'm betting you've probably been in that scene before also. You see, with the exception of the Mother's Day clip, which had its own specific purpose, I chose the clips for this sermon series very, very carefully and very, very deliberately. And in that clip, the stereotypes that we see in a family, they're all there. There's the mom desperately trying to hold the family together, first by trying to encourage conversation and then literally trying to hold the family together. There's the awkward and distracted and almost seems disinterested dad. There's the hyperactive kid. Yeah, that's Dash. I like Dash. I relate to Dash. I don't run as fast as him, but I relate to Dash. Then there is the moody teenager. And then there's the toddler, grabbing all the attention and just drinking it all in. Did you notice in the middle of the fight, the only one that was having a good time? The baby. Yeah, bring it on. There's more. This is entertainment time. But we need to remember, this is not just a normal family. These guys have superpowers. There's dad's brute force strength. He breaks a plate with a steak knife and then he lifts the table, family and all. There's the stretchy, flexible mom. Yep. There's Violet's invisibility and her powerful force fields to keep everybody away. Tell me that's not a teenage thing. There's Dash's speed. No running in the house. And then there's Jack-Jack, and well, tell you what, see you next week. I'll let Azariah deal with Jack-Jack. We're going to leave him right where he is. But as we look at this and we're watching this family and we know that they have superpowers, they are dealing with some very common issues. They're teaching a baby to eat, which, by the way, is a disgusting job. Okay, there is no other way to say it. It is a disgusting job teaching a child. Yeah, that really is how it works. And you do make weird faces. It just sort of happens. There's the son that gets sent to the principal. Yep, been there, done that. There is the team relationship issue. Matt's sitting there thinking, yeah, I'm not looking forward to those days. They're coming. That's just the way it works. There's the sibling rivalry and teasing that's going on at the dinner table. Yeah, we've never had that before, have you? We still have that, okay? And then as you're sitting there at that table, there's the complex and social family issues that are all present on that scene. And well, we understand this is a family, but they're also supposed to be superheroes. And everybody knows that with great power comes great responsibility. I know, wrong movie, but it sure does fit here. So, and it goes like this until what happens? The doorbell rings. And all of a sudden we realize there's somebody else watching us, and so what did they do? They tried to go back to being a normal family, sitting at the table, and they sit up nice and straight. You know what? I think that's what we do a lot of times. We have all this stuff going on in our life, and then we come here, and it's like the doorbell ringing, and, well, we want to turn it all off and just be normal, leave my chaos where it is. And this morning, I don't want you to do that. Your chaos is welcome here, because just so you know, mine comes here every single week. I come here carrying the baggage from a week, just like everybody else that's sitting here. And I'm going to keep my promise this morning as we step into our next incredible topic. I'm going to start right where I left off, right at the conclusion of last week's sermon, Deuteronomy chapter 30, verse 19. This day I call the heavens and the earth and the witnesses against you that I have set before you life and death, blessings and curses. Now choose life so that you and your children may live. So this is right at the end of Deuteronomy, and Moses has just finished preaching a 31-chapter sermon. Anybody would like me to try that? Let me know. I'd love to give it a whirl. I may be sitting here by myself when I'm done, but he preached for 30 chapters, and now he's right there in chapter 30, and he's given his conclusion, and he gives them choices. Remember, we talked about choices last week, and he says, your choices are real simple. Choose life or death. Or choose blessings or curses. And I read that, I'm thinking, that's an easy choice. If you give me the choice between life or death, 99% of my days, I would choose life. There are some days I'm kind of like, just take me home now, God. I'm all good and I'm done. But we would choose life given that choice. And if you ask me, do you want to be blessed or do you want to be cursed? That's a no-brainer choice, right? Obviously, I'm going to take the good over the bad, right? Then why don't we make the choices the way we do? That's where we were driving at last week, that we have to realize the choices that we make, these are the choices, life and death, blessings or curses, but that's not the focus. We talked about that last week. What I am interested in this week is that last little sentence, that you and your children may live. This is about family. Not just the physical family, but also the spiritual family that we call the family of God. This sermon series cuts both ways. So today's topic, get ready, how to raise incredible kids, or children is the proper term. I've been told I need to stop calling them kids. I'm still going to call them kids. That's what we grew up calling them. And I just want to go ahead and tell you now, curl up your toes and get ready, because this is one of those topics I absolutely, positively have a passion for talking to you about. How do we go about raising incredible children? And well, the first swing is not going to go toward the family. So family, we're going to get there in just a minute. I'm going to start with the church, because if I start with the family, I know what's going to happen. Everybody's going to put their pencils down and say, this doesn't apply to me, because I've been there, done that, and I haven't got the t-shirt, and my kids are all grown. You understand, your job is not done. Because how do we raise incredible children in a church? Well, the first thing we need to remember is children were incredibly important to Jesus, and so we have to have an incredible commitment. This is what Jesus said in Matthew chapter 19, verse 14. Jesus said, let the little children come to me. Do not hinder them, for the kingdom of heaven belongs to such as these. So Jesus said, adults, get over yourselves. This should be a child-centric focus because they're important to me. How important? Do you think it's a coincidence that when Peter gets restored there in Matthew and Jesus and John, and he's sitting there talking to him, where does Jesus start? When he finished eating, Jesus said, Simon Peter, son of John, do you love me more than these? Yes, Lord, he said. You know I love you. Jesus said, feed my lambs. He didn't start with feed my sheep. He didn't start with the grown-ups. He said, hey, Peter, first things first, get it straight. Feed the lambs, the little ones. In case you're thinking Jesus wasn't serious about this, I'd like to remind you about Matthew chapter 18, verse 6. Jesus' words, not mine. If anyone causes one of these little ones, those who believe in me, to stumble, it would be better for them to have a large millstone hung around their neck and be drowned in the depths of the sea. You think Jesus didn't have a passion for kids? Yeah, he did. Therefore, if you are a follower of Christ, and thus you love the things that Jesus loves, then guess what? You have to love kids. So let me just for a moment take off the senior minister robe, not literally, take off the, and let's just let my youth minister background bleed through for just a minute, because I got some things I need to remind you of. Church, did you know 85% of the people that accept Christ will do so before their 15th birthday? Yikes. 85% of the people that become Christians do so before they turn 15. Wow. That means if I'm just looking at the economics of it, in my Great Commission mission, the easiest and thus cheapest people to reach are children. And I said it before, and I'll continue to stick to it, there is no greater responsibility to a church than the children they're providing to teach and raise and help grow. And I'd like to look at the other side of the coin. If you want to know how much God trusts the church, look at how many kids they give us to raise. Because God's not going to give you his most valuable resource if you're not willing to take care of it. That's just the way it works. God sends kids where they're going to get fed. Why? Because that's what he told Peter. Feed my lambs. Take a look at this. A church that has no priority for kids, you may as well lock the doors and hang up a sign that says going out of business. Because eventually, you will be. Because kids are not just tomorrow, kids are the today. They're the field that God gives us that is the most fertile and open. Kids love to be talked to. They love to have people reach into their lives. The saddest thing a church can ever say is kids' ministries are too expensive because they're priceless. When it comes to budget, there are many things I'll fight about. Want to cut a bit the kids' budget? I'll fight. I'll fight hard because you know what? They're priceless. You're cutting off your investment strategy because Jesus says, don't hinder them. Jesus said, do everything possible to reach them because you think Jesus didn't know? 85% of the people that accept Christ will do so before their 15th birthday. So here's the question. Where are you investing at? And I know what somebody's going to say, well, I'm just not a kid person. That's okay. I'm good with that. Because you know what I also know from my years and years and years of youth ministry? Kids are not looking for adults to be like them. They are looking for adults they can be like. You don't have to be a kid person that can get on the floor and roll around. Sometimes that's helpful, but you don't have to be that person to actually invest in a kid's life because they're not looking for more kids. They got plenty of those. They're looking for examples. They're looking for people they can be like. Folks, they're looking to be adults in the church. They're looking for a roadmap of how do I get a relationship with Jesus. You think this isn't important? And as far as not being a kid person, like I said, 17 years I did youth ministry. And you give me an adult who says they're not a kid person but has a heart for kids, I'll take them any day of the week. Because you know what they become? They become a snowplow that will push every single hindrance out the way. They realize, I can't do this, but you know what? I can remove as many barriers as possible. So let me just give you a little practical moment here. I understand there are a lot of people that aren't into the kid thing and they don't want to be here for VBS because this place is going to have a lot of kids. I understand. But that doesn't mean you can't remove a barrier by picking a street and grabbing a pack of door hangers and go invite some kids. That's just the way it works. Everybody, when we say kid ministry, it is a call for all hands on deck. That simple. Why? Because 85% of kids, 85% of people that accept Christ will accept them before their 15th birthday. It's not just a commitment to kids. It's a commitment to their parents. Think about it. The parents need us to come alongside them and support them and help them and sometimes minister to them. That's the way it's supposed to work. Go read Titus, where the older women are ministering to the younger women who are ministering to their families. To the older men, they're ministering to the younger men who are ministering to their families. It's supposed to be an interconnected loop or circle in our churches all across the board. And I know that's hard to hear. But let's just talk about what it really means also to raise those incredible kids. Because it isn't just about commitment. Our kids, both in the church and in our homes, they need an incredible amount of consistency. But let your yes be yes and your no be no, for what is more than these is from the evil one. If you want to lose a child, all you need to tell them is do as I say, not as I did. They will tune you out in a heartbeat. Our kids need consistent examples from all of us. Paul tells us that, men, we need to be especially aware of this, because in Ephesians chapter 6, 4, he says, fathers, do not exasperate your children. Instead, bring them up in the training and instruction of the Lord. So I can adapt this from fathers to men. Men, we should not be exasperating children. We should be figuring out a way that we can help, what does it say? Train them and instruct them. You know the terms that Paul is using there are military terms. I've never been in the military, but I've watched enough movies and talked to enough military people to know that is the job of a drill sergeant. You know what the cool thing about a drill sergeant is? He goes to battle with them. He doesn't just give them a bunch of commands and sit back behind the desk and say, go fight the battle and let me know when it's done. Oh, no. The sergeants go with them into the battle. They're going to show them the consistency that they need, because you need to remember, everybody, if you may remember nothing else from this sermon, make sure you store this one away. Children are forgiving individuals, but if you empty the trust account, you have no chance of getting them back. Almost none. It's impossible. Once they don't trust you, you know how expensive it is to re-earn trust? So the good thing would be to be consistent up front and let them know. Now, this isn't just about parents. This also carries into the church. Because we need a little object lesson reminder. Remember that church that we call Laodicea? It's found in Revelation chapter 3. You remember what they were known for? The Bible says, I know your deeds, that you are neither hot nor cold, and I wish you were either one, you wish you were one or the other. So this was a church that was up, and then it was down, and then it was up, and then it was down. It was hot or cold, but it could never find its even keel. And do you remember what God said about this church? He said, I know your deeds, and they absolutely, positively make me sick. Isn't that what it says? So because you are lukewarm, neither hot nor cold, I am about to spit you out of my mouth. That's a disgusting picture. It's like Jack-Jack with the food. God's like, I'm not going to eat this. I'm not going to swallow this. Folks, I want consistency. As a matter of fact, I'm really goner what God's saying with that lukewarm thing. God would rather deal with a cold-hearted pagan than he would with a half-hearted Christian. Boy, that's a hard statement to hear. God would rather deal with somebody that is ice cold and says, no God for me, than somebody that plays this game all the time and is up and down and up and down and never finds a place for God to be forward in their life. Is that hard to hear? Yeah, it is. But you do realize that's the testimony that I want to give my kids. That's the testimony not only the ones that live in my house, but the ones at the church, and the fact that, hey, look, I may be consistently wrong, but at least I will always be consistent. Okay? What you see is what you get. Sometimes it's kind of raw, sometimes it's kind of obnoxious, but I am who I am. And that's what kids need to see. And God, he doesn't just ask for it. He demands it. Be consistent in your lives. Not only will it help you, it allows you to reach back into another life and pull them forward into the future. And this is hard. This is really hard. Because you know what? Consistency sometimes is just so plain difficult with the lives that we're living. But if you want to raise an incredible kid, you better make sure you do it. You better make sure whatever you say is important is actually important. You better make sure that what you say is important enough to do, that you actually do it. That's going to create incredible kids. And after you get some consistency, now you're going to have to get some compassion. And this is the second week this word has showed up on the screen. And I do get that when I do that, that my own family is kind of thinking, yeah, you need to go back and read these more because I am not known for my compassion. But just know this is not an excuse. It's a shortfall. Something that I have to work on constantly, because this isn't just mom's job. Interesting enough, it's dad's job too. Psalm chapter 103, verse 13. A father has compassion on his children, so the Lord has compassion on those who fear him. I'm supposed to represent God to my kids. Of course, moms are not excluded, because it says, can a mother forget the baby at her breast and have no compassion on a child she has born? Though she may forget, I will never forget you. Compassion is important in our families. But just so you know, I'm not very good at it, but I get to defend myself a little bit, because a lot of times we misrepresent this word compassion. So let me tell you what it means to have incredible compassion on your kids. Parents, I hope you're taking notes, because people, I hope you're taking notes, because the first thing is you want your children to feel loved, but you know what that means. Sometimes you have to love them enough to discipline them. That's compassion. You want your children to feel safe, but that may require protecting them from dangers that they don't understand. So you begin, when your compassion, you may actually create stress in your family because they don't get it. You want your children to fly, but you must give them some roots. Think about it this way. Parents, let me come straight to you right now. One of the things I love to do is, the only thing at the beach I love to do is fly kites. Take the big kites, and you've got the nice wind coming off the ocean. You can put up a nice big kite. But imagine trying to fly a kite with no string. How well would that work? Well, if you manage to get it up, you only get to do it once. You know why? Because it's going to be out to sea somewhere. What's the purpose of the string? The string is so that you can hold enough onto the kite. The kite can go, the kite can go, the kite can sail, the kite can go left, it can go right, it can do loop the loops, it can go wherever it wants. But you understand, you have to hold the string. That's the balancing act when you become a parent. You want to give them the ability to fly, but you also have to give them some roots, something that can be hung on to, something they can hang on to. And so what that means is, this is where the uncompassionate look comes from. Setting boundaries while encouraging them to have freedom. That's difficult, right? I want you to be free. I want you to go do things. I want you to go try things. I want you to go experience things. But here are the boundaries. Go no further than these. It means having expectations while allowing for mistakes. You should have expectations for your kids. But when they don't meet the expectations, then you have to give them some room to miss the ball every now and then and tell them it's going to be okay. You have to hold them accountable while providing grace. That's hard, folks. Because in my life, accountability is accountability. It's the way life works. You just want to hold people. But inside of your accountability, you have to have grace. It means that allowing them to fall, knowing that you're going to have to pick up all of the broken pieces. Been there, done that. Both in my physical family and all the years as youth minister, you'd be surprised how many lives you end up having to put back together, one piece at a time. And before you say, well, how do you do that? Well, let me ask you a question. Isn't this what God did for us? Think about it. Didn't God create man with free will? And then look at man and say, I have given you free will, but then he gave them one thou shalt not, don't eat of this tree. So I gave them freedom. But then I set a boundary for them to use their freedom. If you move a little further, didn't God have expectations? Sure. He expected them to live in a relationship with him. Did he have allowances for mistakes? When man fell, did he write them off? Or did he sacrifice a couple animals to make clothes for them? Yeah, you get the picture, right? Did he hold them accountable? Absolutely. He didn't pat them on the head and say, "It's okay, Adam and Eve. We get it. We'll just write that one off and we'll just give you a mulligan, a do-over." Absolutely not. He held them accountable, but then he came and died for them. See, that's the way this thing works. He allowed them to fall. When they were reaching out for that fruit, he didn't smack their hands and say, "Get your hands off of that." I'm sure with tears down his eyes, he watched as they took. He allowed them to fall, understanding, "I'm going to have to pick all these pieces back up and put them back together." And that means dying on the cross. That's incredible compassion, folks. Not that your kids are always going to love the way that you do things. Not the way that you're never going to have any argument. Not that your dinner table isn't going to sometimes be a little chaotic. You get it. That's part of the job. But it says, I'm supposed to treat my kids as Christ treated me. And that means I have to be willing to make some sacrifices. Isn't that what it costs God? But in that sacrifice, I get the opportunity to raise some truly incredible kids because I've made a commitment to them. Because I've shown some consistency with them. I've shown some compassion for them. And well, I have some curiosity for them. And I know what you're thinking. Barry needed one more C to go with his little outline. So he came up with this word. What on earth does curiosity have to do with raising kids? If you're thinking that way, you still think curiosity is all about a little monkey that gets in trouble or a dead cat. Because that is not what curiosity is all about. As a matter of fact, here are the definitions. Curiosity is marked by desire to investigate and learn, marked by inquisitive interest in others' concerns. I like this word, nosy. Exciting attention is strange. I can do that. Novel or unexpected. Odd. I can do odd. I'm okay with odd. Curious parents, you absolutely positively raise incredible children. And here's why. You see, I know something about curious parents because I am one. My kids would like me sometimes to be less curious, but I'm curious. And when I'm curious, curious parents are interested in learning about their kids. You know what? I have a surprise for you. They may look like you. They may at times even act like you. But they ain't you. When God put them together and gave them their soul and brought them into this world, you understand they are their own individuals who are having to learn who they are. And you know who else has to learn who they are? You do. I'm still trying to this day to figure out how I ended up with two sons and no ball players. I don't get it, because when I was little, you know where I spent all of my time that I wasn't getting in trouble? On a ball field. Football, baseball, basketball, ball. You know what? They're not me. As much as I would enjoy sometimes them being me, or they would exasperate me even more if they were me probably, but they're not me. So you have to be willing to learn who your kids are. And that means sometimes you have to take interest in things that you're not interested in. Boy Scouts. I'm not a camper. But you know what? My son loved it. Band. I can't play a musical instrument. But both of my kids love it. So I have to be curious enough to learn who they are and accept them for what God made them to be. Curious parents, why are they so important? Did my clicker just run out? Try this again. There we go. Curious parents are good parents because raise incredible kids because they are inquisitive. Now, my kids have another word for this. Nosy. I like the word inquisitive. It makes it sound so much better. You know what that means? I want to know who your friends are. I want to know where you're going. I want to know what you're doing. I want to know about your grades. I want to know about this. I want to know everything about your life. And I'm not being nosy. Next time your kid calls you nosy, you say, no, I'm just being inquisitive. Okay? They'll have to go look the word up. It'll be really cool. They won't know what it meant. Okay? I want to be inquisitive. I want to know everything there is to know about my kids. Now, as they've gotten older, we've had to learn things like personal space. And privacy is important as they get older to an extent. But you get it. It never goes away. Even when they're 30, 40, 50, and they're raising their own kids and they have their own grandkids, you realize you're still going to want to be inquisitive. I know this because I have a mom. And she's constantly still giving me advice on how to live my life. I'm 53 years old. I think I've got... Nope. She still wants to know. She still asks the questions. She wants to know how it's going in my life. Who are you hanging out with? Well, how's your job going? That's going to help you raise incredible kids. That's what they need. Yeah, they're going to not want it, especially when they get around 12. The information pipe just goes, whoop! Okay, and you have to pump it for all it's worth. It's kind of like Violet. I'm not interested in this kind of in meatloaf. Yeah, parents are like, yeah, I get this. Yeah, I've been here. Maybe you're going through this right now. You understand it's your job. Pump it. Look to get the information. Even if it means you have to sit there and eat meatloaf one night, make sure you gather around and you get the information so you know what's going on in your kid's life. Because those curious parents, they offer exciting attention. It is a psychological fact. A child will choose bad attention over no attention. That's just the way it works. If your child gets no attention, you can expect them to act out, because guess what? They would rather you yell at them than ignore them. That's a fact. So we need to figure out ways as parents, as curious parents, to offer exciting attention to our kids. Sometimes that means going out and sitting in a hot ball game and sweating for a couple of hours as you watch your kid play what I call kitten ball. Sometimes that means you do things that you didn't really want to do just because you want them to know, I care about your life. It isn't just enough to ask them the questions. It isn't just enough to be nosy. They want to see some proof in the action. Find out what they're into it and then get into it. If they're into video games, get into video games. If they're into karate, get into karate. Whatever it is, you know what? They want to know that you are willing to go in there and be attentive to them. I promise you, if you ignore them, somebody else will pay them attention. They'll get the attention they crave from somewhere else, and when they get that attention, that person has their heart and will lead them wherever they want them to go. You see, the world keeps telling us, parents, church, hands off! Let them be their own individuals. Let them grow and learn on their own. Let them experience. Let them do this. Let them do that. And the Bible doesn't say that. We're familiar with this verse from Proverbs chapter 22, verse 6. What does it say? Start your children off in the way they should go, and even when they were old, they will not depart from it. I know they're not very politically correct one these days, but I used to love the circus. And I don't mean what they call a circus nowadays. I've heard what they call a circus, but I used to love like the traditional circuses because I liked the animals. Don't want one living in my house, don't want a pet, but I do like the animals at a circus. And one that always fascinated me was the elephant. You ever see elephants at a circus? They have these great big mammoth huge beasts. I mean, these things can push over trees, and they are huge, and they are strong, and they're held in place with a little cuff around their ankle in a stake that's about this long. And the elephant sits there with that stake and doesn't run away. Now, an adult elephant could easily rip that stake off the ground, but you know why the elephants don't go anywhere? This may sound cruel, but it's a really good analogy for what I'm talking about this morning. When the elephant is a baby, they used to attach that elephant to a stake that was buried in concrete that a baby elephant couldn't pull up. So by the time the elephant became a full-grown elephant, whenever it felt the cuff come on its foot, it realized, there's the limit. And it took it all the way into its adult life, and it stayed on the mark and never tried to run away. You get that's what the Proverbs is saying that we're supposed to do with our kids? We're supposed to take God's word and attach it to their life in such a way that as they get old, it will go with them all the way through their life. That sounds like a full-time job, doesn't it? It's a lifetime job, folks. But here's the thing. This isn't just about parents. I'm talking to everybody in the sound of my voice. If you know a parent, if you know a kid, guess what? You should be the support system for that parent. For that child. There is no such thing as not a kid person that is a Jesus person. They don't exist because you're supposed to love the things that God loved. See, what we're looking for to raise incredible kids, I'm looking for some investors. Now, I use that term because as all the adults sitting here, if you watch your 401k plans, if you understand the concept of investing, right? I take a portion of what I'm earning now, and I put it away in an account, and I'm hoping to draw from it when I get older. That's the way investment works, right? You get this the same way it's supposed to work in the church, right? I'm supposed to take a portion of my time, ability, and talents, and the money, and everything that comes into a church, and I'm supposed to invest it into the future. Well, what's the future? Well, they're the ones we just sent downstairs for children's church to talk about them, okay? And I'm supposed to invest it to them so that as they get older, they can draw on the investment that I make in their life. That's why Jesus said, don't hinder the kids to come to me. That's why Jesus looked at Peter and said, feed my lambs. That's why he made it so serious to say, hey, guess what? You'd be better off going out and jumping in the ocean with a lead balloon around you than hindering a kid. Because Jesus understood. This is all about investing in the future. Not just in my future, it's their future. So my question to you is, how many of you here are good investors? Now, to do that, I know how you do that. You go home and you sign into your account and you look at your portfolio and you see where you put your time. How's the interest going? Is it going up or down? Nothing's going up right now, just so you know. If you're feeling bad, nothing's going up. But you know what could be going up? Our kids. We could take our energy and our resources and we could pour them into the kids, and I promise you the investment will return dividends. Not in your lifetime, in their lifetime.